There remained only clearing the landing, legs for movement. Hikaki had left just hours ago with a picked crew and the ship's skiff. Krydike wished he could have spared more to go help Suessi, but Streaker was already well below minimum complement. He still saw no alternative to Thomas Orley's plan. Metz and Takata Jim had been unable to come up with anything short of outright surrender to the winner of the battle overhead, and that was one thing Krydike could never permit, not while there was any chance at all. Passive sensors showed the fight in space peaking in fury. Within days, it might climax, and the last opportunity for an escape in the confusion would be upon them. I hope Tom arrived safely, and his experiment is successful. The water echoed with low grumblings of engines being tested. Krydike had calculated the acceptable noise levels himself. There were so many forms of leakage. Neutrinos from the power plant, gravitonics from the stasis screen, psi from everyone aboard. Sound was the least of his worries. As he swam, Krydike heard something above him. He turned his attention surfaceward. A solitary neofin drifted near the detector buoys, working on them with harness manipulators. Krydike moved closer. Is there a problem here to bother duty's patterns? He recognized the giant Stenos, Kapha John. The bosun started. His eyes widened, and momentarily Krydike could see the whites around the flat, boat-like pupils. Kapha John recovered quickly. His mouth opened in a grin. Noise buzz bothered, neutrino listener. She could not hear the battle raging. Now she tells me static has fled. I'll to my duty now be leaving. This was serious business. It was vital that Streaker's bridge know what was going on in the sky and be able to hear news of Thomas Orley's mission. Takata Jim should have detailed someone else to do the job. The boys were the responsibility of the bridge crew. Still, with Hikaki and Tisht gone, and most of the elite bridge crew with them, perhaps Kapha John was the only petty officer who could be spared. Good as jumping, big wave rider, now hurry back to those who need you. Kapha John nodded, his harness arms folded back. Without another word, he blew a cloud of bubbles and dove toward the bright opening of Streaker's lock. Krydike watched the giant go. Superficially, Kapha John appeared to have reacted more resiliently than many of the other Fen. Indeed, he had seemed to relish the fighting retreat from Morgren, and manned his gun battery with fierce enthusiasm. He was an efficient non-com. Then why do my hackles rise whenever I'm near him? Is he another of Metz's sports? I must insist Dr. Metz stop stalling and show me his records. If necessary, I'll override the man's door locks. Protocols be damned. Kapha John had become Lieutenant Takata Jim's constant companion. Together with Metz, the three were the chief opponents to Tom Orley's plan. There was still bad bile over it. Takata Jim had become more taciturn than ever. Krydike felt compassion for the lieutenant. It was not his fault this test cruise had become a crucible. But pity would not prevent Krydike from promoting Hikaki over his head as soon as the crew was reunited. Takata Jim was likely aware of what was coming and of the report the captain had to write on each of his officers for the uplift center. Takata Jim's right to have bonus offspring might be in jeopardy. Krydike could imagine how the vice captain felt. There were times when he, too, felt oppressed by the towering invasiveness of uplift. When he wanted to squawk in primal, "Who gave you the right?" And the sweet hypnosis of the whale dream would call him to embrace the old gods. The moment always passed, and he recalled that there was nothing in the universe he wanted more than to command a starship, to collect tapes of the songs of space, and explore the currents between the stars. A school of native fish swam past. They looked a little like mullet, kitsch mullet, in garish metal flake scales. He felt a sudden urge to give chase, to call his hard-working crew out to join him in a hunt. He envisioned his stolid engineers and techs dropping their harnesses to join in the squealing pack, nimbly driving the poor creatures, catching them in mid-air as panic drove them leaping above the surface. Even if a few Fen got carried away and swallowed some metal, it would be worth it for morale. All the rains of spring, and then, one secret evening, riding waves, the moon. It was a haiku of regret. There was no time for hunt games, not while they themselves were quarry. His harness chime announced that he had only 30 minutes air left. He shook himself. If his meditation had gone any deeper, Nukupai might have come. The chimerical goddess would have teased him. Her gentle voice would have reminded him of Hikahi's absence. The observation buoys bobbed nearby, tethered by slender strands to the seabed below. He swam closer to the smooth red and white ovoid Katha John had worked on, and noticed that the access plate had been left ajar. Krydike's head bobbed as he cast narrowly focused sound. The odd geometry of the buoy and guy wires was mildly disturbing. His sonar speak receiver buzzed. An amplified voice came to him over the neural patch line. "Captain, this is Takata Jim. We've just finished testing the impellers and the stasis generators. They're working up to your new specs. Also, Suesi called to say that the Trojan Seahorse is coming along. Hikahi has arrived there and sends greetings."
"Good,"
Krydike sent the words directly along the neural link. "Has there been anything from Orly?"
"No, sir, and it's getting late. Are you sure you want to go with this plan of his? What if he can't get a Psi-bomb message back to us?"
"We have already discussed contingencies."
"And we're still going to move the ship? I think we ought to talk it over one more time."
Krydike felt a wave of irritation. "We'll not discuss policy over an open channel, Pod Second, and it's already decided. I'll be back shortly. Meanwhile, search for loose ends to bite off. We must be ready when Tom calls."
"Aye, sir."
Takata Jim didn't sound at all apologetic as he switched off. Krydike had lost count of the number of times he had been questioned about this plan. If they lacked faith because he was only a dolphin, they should have noted that the original idea was Thomas Orley's. Besides, he, Krydike, was captain. He was the one saddled with saving their lives and honor. When he had served aboard the survey vessel James Cook, he had never witnessed its human master, Captain Alvarez, questioned this way. He slashed his tail through the water until his temper cooled, counting as the calming patterns of Kinnik settled over him. "Let it go," he decided. The majority of the crew did not question, and the rest obeyed, if grudgingly. For an experimental crew under immense pressure, that would have to do. "Where there is mind, there is always solution," Kinnik taught. All problems contain the elements of their answer. He commanded his manipulator arms to reach out and grab the access panel to the buoy. If things were in good order, he would find a way to praise Takata Jim. There must be a key to reach the lieutenant, to pull him back into the ship's community and break his vicious cycle of isolation. Where there is mind. It would only take a few minutes to find out if it was working. Krydike plugged an extension from his neural socket into the buoy's computer. He commanded the machine to report its status. A brilliant arc of electric discharge flashed. Krydike screamed as the shock blew out the motors of his harness and seared the skin around his neural tap. A penetrator bolt. Krydike realized in stunned rigidity. How? He felt it all in slow motion. The current fought with the protective diodes of his nerve amplifier. The main circuit breaker threw, but the insulation almost immediately buckled under backlash. Paralyzed, Krydike seemed to hear a voice in the pulsing, battling fields, a voice taunting him.